Hi, and welcome to Fresh Voices, the podcast where we tell stories and learn new perspectives. I'm Julia Pinney, Voices Editor for the Georgetown Voice. Maybe you remember Fresh Voices from last year. Well, we're back, and we've made a few changes that we hope you'll enjoy. You'll hear some new voices, and we'll be showing up in your feed more often. Over the course of the next few months, I hope someone's story resonates with you, maybe makes you feel a little less alone, and I hope most of all you'll learn something. I'm excited to be here today with Lila Burke for this semester's very first episode to talk about her quest for the personal. Lila, would you introduce yourself?
Sure thing. I'm Lila. I graduated from Georgetown in August, and I'm a former voice writer. Now I live in DC, I work for a labor union, and I do some freelance news journalism in the city.
Well, I'm super happy you're here. Let's get started. I remember being at a social gathering with you sometime last year, I'm pretty sure, and you brought up that you have five questions that you like to ask people when you first meet them. Would you talk about that and what these questions are?
Yes, of course. So the personal questions game, or the PQ game, as all of my friends call it, is, I guess, sort of like my way to try to get closer to people that I don't really feel like I'm super close with yet, or, you know, it's sort of like a relationship building tool. And I originally made up the game, not for that purpose. Someone I knew he had been like hooking up with one of my friends, and then he wasn't doing that anymore, and I wanted to be really nosy and be like, well, why aren't you hooking up with my best friend anymore? Because she's sad. And so I was like, oh, we're gonna play this fun personal questions game. And then I like on the spot made up all of these questions, and one of them was like, why are you not hooking up with my friend? So that's in the questions. But yeah, so that was what it was originally for. And then it sort of morphed into something I do with a lot of people, asking them these five different questions. And I was sort of, I guess, more, you know, interested in it after reading, the 36 questions to fall in love in the New York Times, which sort of builds on this. But I think if I could make the questions over again, I would have made them different. I think they were kind of, I mean, looking back, they're a little like maybe immature or something like that. But I think that, you know, they get the job done, I guess.
What are the five questions?
Okay, so the five questions, so before I get into them, they focus like about them being immature. Is just they focus a lot on like things like sex and drinking and sex again.
It's an important topic, and we don't talk about it nearly enough.
Yes, but I would just like to emphasize that the questions, it's not really like the content of the answers that really matter. I would say it's more, the person's emotional reaction to the answers and how they sort of think about, not learning things in a person's life. I mean, that can tell you something about someone, but really how they think about and feel about those moments in their life. And I think that's more of the, more of what you learn about someone. So the questions are, let's see if I can remember them. The first one is, how do you get along with your parents? The second one is, at what age did you start drinking? The third is, it's at what age was your sexual debut?
And sexual debut. I think that's great, great wording.
Yeah, well, sexual debut, I feel like, is so important because so many people think about, I just feel like virginity is, like, a dumb concept. And, like,
it's a complicated concept.
Yeah, and also I feel like it, like, you know, if someone was like, had some, you know, sexual assault in their past or something like that, you know, that's, that might have been when they like, I'm using air quotes here, like lost their virginity, but mm-hmm. you know, that, that might not be when they felt like they debuted sexually or someone had a bad sexual experience or, you know.
I like that question because it gives a level of autonomy to that choice.
It's like it's, when you feel like you
it's not a line that you have crossed until you feel that you have in fact crossed it. It's mm-hmm. it gives you the choice back.
Right. And I also think asking people that question, if, you know, someone maybe hasn't had a lot of sexual experience, it sort of gives them the out to be like, well, my first kiss was when I was 16, and, you know, or like, some people interpret it more as like sexual awakening, and they can be like, oh, I watched Aladdin when I was 5, and it was a great time. You know what I mean?
Okay. I mean, no judgments, but I don't know. 5, wow.
So it gives people like a sort of range of experience. I mean, I do like being very direct, but you know, a little bit of an out is okay.
So I think that's 3.
Yeah, that's 3. Really, the questions are a little muddy. I just sort of like try to remember all of them. The fourth is usually like, why are you not hooking up with so-and-so? And I just pick a person that we both know. And I mean, sometimes it's like, you know, a dumb answer, like, I'm in a relationship or something like that. But in the spirit of tradition, that's the fourth question. And then the fifth is, when did you last cry? And I mean, usually the follow-up is, why were you crying? And mm-hmm. everything.
That's actually a question on the 36 mm-hmm. questions.
Yeah, I was very inspired by that.
On the 36 questions to fall in love, which for those of you listening who are not familiar with that, it's something I love and I feel everyone should know about it. And I think you probably would agree, Lila, mm-hmm. that it's wonderful. And it's a series of questions that was made popular by a modern love column in the New York Times. And they come from a study in which a psychologist, Arthur Aaron, he had two strangers come into a room and ask each other a series of increasingly personal questions with the goal of fostering intimacy or closeness. What would you say? It's
love.
Love. Love right there. And I think what's great about it is an intentional choice when two people enter into that. And mm-hmm. now that it's kind of come into the public sphere and it's not just a tool for psychology studies anymore, mm-hmm. often two people will sit down and say, okay, we're gonna do these two questions. We're gonna do these 36 questions together. Mm-hmm. And often it does bring people quite close. So had you read those before you did your questions?
No, I hadn't read them. Though when I read them, I was definitely like, this is, I guess I was very inspired by it to sort of take my PQs on the road, I guess. And because I think, you know, it's so, the 36 questions are like to fall in love and everything else. But like, I think it's kind of hard to say to someone like, hey, you want to do these 36 questions to fall in love? Because people are like, are you in love with me? Like, what is this? You know, and I also think that there's just so much you can gain in a platonic relationship from really sharing and opening up and lots of stuff like that. I mean, it requires a lot of, like, good faith on both, you know, all participants of the PQ game or the 36 questions or anything like that. So it is a, you know, it is a choice to go into, as you say. But, yeah. But I think it's a lot about, I guess, you know, seeing where people are at emotionally and sort of their emotional history. And I think that's a lot of what the 36 questions are, too. And so, yeah, I just want to emphasize again that it's not the answers to the questions, but it's really gauging how, you know, how someone feels, what are the themes in emotion throughout their life, you know, who are they close with, what's caused them challenges, or, you know, what's been motivating for them, and I think that's, yeah, and that's what you're sort of hoping to gain. I think it's definitely easy, though, to do the questions, you know, my questions or their questions, and not learn any of that if you like don't ask the right way. I think that lots of people will give you like a like, how do you get along with your parents? Like, good, you know.
I think something I was thinking about when I was thinking about your five questions, when I was comparing it to the 36 questions, was that for the 36 questions to fall in love, I mean, sometimes it's a one-sided conversation in that in that one person walks into a conversation and thinks, huh, okay, I have this list of questions in my head. What's your relationship with your mother? Yeah. When was the last time you cried? Do you, one of my favorites is, do you want to be famous and in what way? I think that really shows a lot about someone. Yeah. But often the 36 questions, two people decide to be in it versus your questions.
Where I just interrogate people at parties.
Your questions are a bit of an ambush.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way. Personally, I do not think that ambush is a bad way. I think we should quote unquote ambush people more with personal questions. But I am curious when you talk about how you have to ask questions in a certain manner. How do you ask random people at parties these questions? Yeah. What kind of tone of voice do you take on? What's your body language?
Oh, damn. Well, you're hitting upon something that I guess I wanted to talk about, which is that, like, I'm a psycho and I don't really have, like, a... This has always come really easy to me, and I've just always been really direct and, like, nosy. I mean, and I realize that... for a lot of people, they are really wary of making other people uncomfortable, which I suppose is, you know, a sense that I just don't really have, because I think that, you know, if someone's, I mean, obviously you don't want to make people too uncomfortable, that's not going to build a lot of trust, but, you know, I think you have to sort of push people and ask, you know, why do you feel like that? Or, you know, like, you know, the last time you cried, like, okay, it was yesterday, but why? And, you know, how does that connect to these other things that you've been talking about and things like that? You know, or even just really simple follow-up questions like, okay, you get along with your parents, good, but which one do you get along with better, and why do you think that is, and stuff like that.
I find in my personal experiences with unofficially interrogating people, because I feel like we're very similar in that way of, I like getting deep quick, and I've had to learn when to temper that a little bit, but I've found that the slow chipping away is quite effective. So the which parent do you have the closest relationship to? Why do you think that is? What about your siblings? Is that the same for them? Why is that?
Yeah, of course.
Just very small, concrete steps. But I do feel like it is an important thing to bring into our conversations. Why do you feel that way? Why do you ask these questions?
Well, I guess I feel like I'm very naturally nosy, and I just want to know about people. I think it builds a lot of trust and intimacy and everything else. And I think that, I mean, you know, it varies, like, per person, but I find that a lot of people, when I talk to them about this sort of stuff, you know, sometimes they've never spoken to anyone about this. You know what I mean? And I think it's sort of a mutual sharing experience, and I think it can be good for them too. And I think sometimes it's really cathartic and good for people. And I also think that, like, you know, while if you want to do this and ask these questions, you also have to go in thinking that the other person is valuable, and their life experiences, their emotions, that's something that you want to know about, that's something, you know, valuable for you to know, that they're a valuable person, they're deserving of, you know, love and affection and all the things that they might desire. And I think that for the person being asked those questions, you know, that can feel very good, you know, to feel that, you know, that you're that you're valued by another person, that another person wants to know about you. I found that for a lot of people who are more private, you know, sometimes it's not that they don't want to, and this I see this a lot with men that I talk to, but it's not really that they don't want to talk about it, or they don't know how, or they feel uncomfortable. But, you know, for some people it really boils down to, well, you know, no one asked. And
do you find that people often, they often want to talk about it? Do you find that?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, it depends on the person, obviously. But yeah, I mean, I've spoken to, I don't know. Yeah, mostly guys, I feel like, are the ones who are like, you know, I don't talk about this with my friends, or, you know, something like that. And they just don't feel like anyone was interested, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think it's probably a human need, mm-hmm, to be known, mm-hmm, and to feel valued, and like, yeah, someone wants to know you and, mm-hmm, know you fully. I think often though it can be very hard and very uncomfortable to let people in that way.
Yeah.
And so I was curious if you've ever had any bad experiences with asking your questions.
Bad experiences.
Maybe bad is not the adjective you should hold on to. More like, did you ever ask these questions to someone and just based off their tone of voice or their body language or them fleeing immediately in some way that they really did not want to answer your questions?
Wow. I think, I mean, yeah. Like I said, like, people do get uncomfortable. And I mean, I don't know. That does seem to bother a lot of people, but it doesn't, you know, I think that discomfort is just a part of life, and so it doesn't really bother me when the people I'm talking to, you know, are vaguely uncomfortable, as long as they keep wanting. I'm always like, well, you could walk away, you know, if this wasn't for you. I did have one person once that just totally shut down, and was not at all interested in answering the questions. And then, like, a week later, he got totally wasted and, like, wanted to tell me his whole life story that he'd never told anyone else or something. So, you know, it wasn't a total bad experience in that I feel like, you know, like, again, like, I think I showed some interest in this person's life, and their emotional journey. And, you know, even if they didn't really want to talk about it then, you know, they did later. So I think, you know, they maybe needed that, you know, person who saw value in their story.
And then I guess the other side of the coin, have you ever had any really good moments with people that led from asking these questions?
Oh, really good moments. I mean, so many good moments. Every time it's like, just, I just always feel like I'm bonding with people, and we just have like such a moment. I don't know. I'm really,
it's kind of the best feeling in the world, actually.
It's really just like, sometimes it's like a, you know, like a sleepover, and it's like 3 a.m. Like, that's how it feels, you know what I mean? Just sometimes to talk about these things that are just a part of our, you know, our lives. And again, it's not the content, it's not the sex, it's just like, you know, talking about things that are really personal to you and that you might not have wanted to talk about. Yeah, in terms of like good experiences, I mean, yeah, I definitely like, yeah. Well, you know Jake. Mm-hmm. Jake is my boyfriend, and he is on The Voice now. And, you know, we were both students and on The Voice, and we were in news, and I was like, you know, this guy is interesting. I want to make him interested in me now.
I know that feeling.
And, you know, but it was pretty like, what, I mean, yeah, I hope he's not listening to this, but it was pretty like chill. I wasn't like, you know, I wasn't that interested. But, you know, and then I, you know, was like, hey, I've got some questions for you, like the, you know, crazy interrogator that
the PQ.
I am. Yeah, the PQ game. Which I feel like really became my, like, trademark when I was on The Voice.
It was your party trick in a way.
Yeah. But, you know, he, I think, is one of those people that's more private and had a lot to say that, you know, and a lot of things that had happened to him recently and stuff like that. And he, you know, was kind of like, yeah, like, no one's ever asked me, you know? And it sort of, you know, was a kind of catalyst for our relationship, I feel like. And I think we grew closer from that, from sort of knowing that we mutually cared about, you know, each other's story and emotions and things like that. And, you know, could see value in each other. And that was a few years ago, so it worked out for me so far. But that's probably my, like, best story.
No, it's a pretty good one. It's a pretty good one. I was thinking about when you talked about the feeling of being on a sleepover, that is often the feeling that I was trying to think of the moment that I stopped having sleepovers, because it was a very specific moment. I think it was honestly when I learned to drive.
Really?
Because...
How old were you?
Well, learning to drive, that was a saga. Uh-huh. Failed the test twice. Oh. But this podcast is not about me failing my driver's test, so I'll save that story for another week. But anyways, so I learned to drive I got my license December when I was 16. Yeah, December of being 16, so it was 2 months after my birthday. And it took away the element of my parents having to come pick me up. Mm-hmm. And my parents, they love going to bed at like 10:30. Yeah. And so for the first time in my life, I was able to stay at people's houses till, you know, a reasonable hour, 11:30. Right. I came home I never had a curfew, but my parents, but I came home at 3 a.m. one night, and my mom very kindly came in the next morning and was like, you can never do that again. It's like, good to know, Mom. We'll do that again. But anyways, it was the first time that I was able to sit at people's houses and really sit with them and spend time with them without having a sleepover. But I did notice, my best friend and I, we have always had very deep conversations, and that's always been something that's really supported our relationship. But I did notice that something I really missed were those kind of late night conversations where you're both asleep.
You're so tired.
You're so tired. You're practically delirious. And like every second sentence, one of you has to like wake the other up. But those are the kind of conversations that I miss from sleepovers. And I feel like these questions inevitably come up.
Yeah.
And I feel like people, for whatever reason, are more willing to share in that moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it kind of reminded me of you at parties.
In a lot of ways, the moment everywhere.
In a lot of ways, maybe parties replace sleepovers, because suddenly you're together late at night. I mean, it's
you're tired.
You're tired. Alcohol, yeah. There's some alcohol, which always keeps the words flowing, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, I mean, yeah, it definitely reminds me of sleepovers as a kid, but I also think it's, you know, something you can do anywhere, and like with your best friends or with people that you don't know as well, you know. And
do you feel like there's a key moment or an appropriate moment in a relationship with someone, like with a new friend, where you can start bringing these things up? Or can you bring it up the first lunch? What's your opinion on that?
Oh, I mean, it all depends on who you are. Again, I feel like a lot of people are like, I don't know. I feel like some people are just uncomfortable making other people uncomfortable. And so then, you know, maybe if you're that kind of person, you want to wait, if this is something you want to do. I mean, obviously it's not for everyone, but I think everyone could benefit. But I always feel like the time that I feel like it makes the most impact in my relationships is when, you know, I sort of know someone from school or work, or we're in the same sort of social group and like hang out sometimes, but we're not close friends, you know, because you're close friends for a lot of people, are the people that you might talk about these things with anyways. And, you know, you're sort of, I'm not a student anymore, so I'm thinking, like, work colleagues, but...
Yeah. New stage of life.
Yeah, or, like, you know, when I was on The Voice, I found it was, like, voice people, you know, that I... Yeah, we're all in this together, but, like, who are you really? And, like, we're not best friends, so, you know, like, let's, you know, see what else is there. And I think that that's when, you know, when you have a sort of mutual comfort with another, with one another, then that's, but you're not, like, close yet. I think that's when it can make the most difference.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I feel like that's a great note to end on, that we should all be a bit brave, mm-hmm. and that we should all maybe take someone who we don't know very well but would like to know, mm-hmm. and just start running out of the gate, yeah. using a metaphor, and just ask them, when was the last time you cried? Have you ever fallen in love? Mm-hmm. What's another question that comes to mind off the top of your head? Maybe a new one that you've added to the PQ game.
Oh, man, I haven't added any in a while. Sorry.
That's okay.
On the spot. I mean, I feel like all the questions are good. I find that asking people, even, you know, asking them about their parents, but asking them about one of their parents specifically, mm-hmm. can usually bring up more of a reaction.
So. Yeah, starting with family. I like that one. Alrighty. Well, thank you, Lila, for this great conversation. I think it really left... me thinking, and hopefully it left all the listeners thinking about how they can implement these personal questions into their own life. So did my conversation with Lila today make you think about a story you've always wanted to tell? Is there an opinion you hold that you've always wanted to talk about? Send me an email at voices@georgetownvoice.com. I promise you will get a reply. I check my email way too often these days. Got to get better at that. So thank you again, Lila. Any last words for our listeners?
Eat the Hoya.
Couldn't agree more. Before I sign off, I'd like to thank Pana Gatyan, this semester's assistant podcast editor, for our fantastic music. I hope you enjoyed the intro. She made that herself. And give Pana, along with Kayla Hewitt, our stellar podcast editor, a shout out. Thank you so much for making this podcast what it is. I hope you'll tune in next week to our next installment of Fresh Voices. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.